Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook. Go to FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard, sign up for an account, take advantage of all the great wagering options they have, especially for all you new signups out there. I am Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. Payne, how are you this fine morning, my friend?
A little chipper, I think. Got a good night's rest, a lot of good games yesterday. It's a good week of NFL football.
So not a lot of competitive games early on in the slate. We did see games get slightly more competitive in the late afternoon. Last night, you saw the difference between one team that can make adjustments in their game plan, another team that wants to continue to bang their heads into a brick wall. More about that in a few moments. As always, on Monday mornings, we'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Look ahead lines, and we had plenty of market movement in the wake of what we saw transpire week 14 on Sunday. And of course, a big game tonight that'll help shape the AFC playoff picture between the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns. But Payne, let's start with the glass half full this fine morning. And I think there's no better place than to go to the city of brotherly love, where at least for one week, Philadelphia Eagles fans can feel confident with the caliber of play they got from the quarterback position. And it was Jalen Hurts leading Philadelphia to the outright upset as an 8-point underdog against the seemingly unbeatable New Orleans Saints. The Eagles offense showed a little bit of a pulse, and the Saints defense was nowhere to be found in the first 30 minutes where they surrendered more than 300 yards.
If Kyle Shanahan could have done his job, the Eagles would have been or would be right in the thick of things. I think they improved
that division,
their...
That division's a mess. I mean, every time you want to give them credit for making a stride forward, they pull you back in, and like you said, Kyle Shanahan and company allowing Washington to get the improbable win, but I digress.
I think Philly, despite the Washington win, increased their playoff chances by about 7 or 8%. So there's still a fighting chance. You mentioned this game, and that's what it came down to, was getting out to a quick start. Philadelphia, I thought, for the first 30 minutes, did a really good job. And they controlled the trenches, which is a little shocking, because you had this Eagles offensive line that was really depleted. You lost Peters as well. And that's against one of the more talented defensive front fours in the NFL, the New Orleans Saints. Miles Sanders woke up and decided to contribute. And you look at the Eagles' offense, 10.4 yards per rush in that first half, 50% rushing success rate, 4 explosive runs all in the first half. Doug Peterson's game plan to me was pretty good. The script was solid. The play calling was decent. And the Eagles did enough in the first half to hang on for dear life in the second, come away with that win and keep themselves alive. Defensively, I thought, before what feels like every single starter for the Eagles left the game in the second half, Philly did a nice job defensively in that first 30-minute stanza as well. 3.6 yards per play allowed, 33% success rate allowed. Taysom only ran it twice in the first half. He was semi-accurate throwing it, but it was just really short, 4.3 yards per attempt in that first half. So across the board, that might have been the Eagles' best half of football this season. They were fantastic, and it was certainly against a team that had more talent. It just looked like Philadelphia wanted it more along the lines of scrimmages.
Pretty incredible when you look at Philadelphia, and I know it's such a limited sample size, so you can't extrapolate much. Since Jalen Hurts took over as the starting quarterback midway through that Packers game, you look at their offense averaging 6.3 yards per play, a far cry from what they did with Carson Wentz. And Payne, you begin to wonder, and we've talked about it, maybe there's just a disconnect with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. With Frank Reich there, even when Peterson was the head coach, he appeared to be the go-between, and those two just don't appear to be on the same page. But I think until further notice, you have to imagine it's Hurts' job, and Philadelphia will ultimately make some of those decisions at the end of the year, given the spark that Hurts provided at least in the late third, early fourth quarter last week, and of course in the full game victory against the Saints to keep their season on life support.
They referenced that, I believe, in a different game. Watch, I can't remember what it was, but they referenced Carson Wentz and Frank Reich having an inseparable bond because they're apparently both religious, and that's kind of how the relationship got off to a good start. But heading into this week, there was some internal issues with Philadelphia, a lot of turmoil going on there. Not everybody was on the same page with this quarterback move. You even had a veteran leader in that locker room, Fletcher Cox, out there liking tweets that said Carson Wentz should be the quarterback. And in my heart of hearts, I believe it's Doug Peterson that probably wanted to stick with Wentz. This comes from upper management. Ultimately, we're going to see what happens here. Let's see what Jalen Hurts looks like. Obviously, you get that one game surge of not truly knowing what to expect and how to defend Jalen Hurts. Once you get a little film on him, let's see what it looks like. He's still not the most developed passer. Based upon Carson Wentz's contract, he's going to be in the mix. I don't even think the Colts, and having that relationship with Frank Reich, is going to be a team that says, hey, we're going to take on the risk of giving up draft capital and putting 30-plus million on the books next year to make this move. So I think Wentz is there for at least another season, unless someone is desperate for a quarterback that thinks that they can change Carson Wentz. And to me, when I look at all of this, Todd, if I had to place like a percentage on what's wrong with Carson Wentz, I would say 75 to 80% of it's mental. The other 20 to 25% is talent. But at this point, he just needs a complete reset. It needs to be like a computer. You just hit the reset button because mentally he's not there, right? He's holding on to the ball too long. He's not seeing certain things. My feeling is, though, if Jalen Hurts doesn't lead these guys to the playoffs and he comes back down to earth once teams figure him out, it's going to be an open competition heading into the next season.
Be interesting to see what kind of adjustments the Arizona Cardinals can make as they'll welcome in Philadelphia, see what Vance Joseph is able to scheme up, knowing that, hey, look, they have a mobile quarterback in their own right that they see every day in practice, so Arizona's defense could be a lot more in tune in terms of the skill set that Jalen Hurts brings to the table. Last night, Payne, we saw two teams apparently headed in very different directions. I know you've been on the Bills bandwagon for the last couple weeks, praising their offensive capabilities and their ability to adapt and adjust. We saw that on full display. After an anemic first half offensively, they get the momentum score with a pick six. Pittsburgh inexplicably, with 52 seconds to go in the half, decides, hey, look, we're going to fold the tents and we're going to take it into the break. And Buffalo stuck it right up their arse out of the second half, poking it in for seven. And that game was pretty much over with the middle eight that we always talk about.
Certainly went against my guy on Monday night, though. That's for sure. And he gave it to us good. Daboll has been nothing short of fantastic for Buffalo's offense. We did. We saw that five-point movement on Monday night in the San Francisco game. Didn't matter. Brian Daboll made adjustments. And I don't know if we talked about this on air or if it was in between segments off air or if it was just me and you chatting, Todd, but ultimately, we were hoping that the Bills would be, for us, one of the largest plays of the season. It was setting up perfectly. We're going to get this overrated, undefeated Pittsburgh team coming into Buffalo. They're up 14-0 against Washington. Everything's looking good. We know San Francisco catches steam Monday night. Five-point move. We're like, ooh, San Francisco can pull off this upset. We're going to be sitting back with Buffalo plus three in this spot. And what happens? It just unravels. Washington comes back, beats Pittsburgh. San Francisco can't score twice from the one-yard line. And they end up losing the game. And all of a sudden, this game opens pick quickly out to 2.5. And suddenly, there's, you know, a five-point swing, so there's not as much value there. But me and you kind of went back and forth. We knew there was some sharp money on Pittsburgh at 2.5. It was never going to get to three. That was going to be a buy point. But I kept coming back to the fact that, give Mike Tomlin credit. Last season, what he did with that quarterback situation, getting to 500 was fantastic. You start the season, regardless of the level of competition, which the schedule has certainly been weak. The opposing quarterbacks have certainly been weak to get out to that 11-0 start. But there is a difference here. Mike Tomlin's a great motivator. Obviously, the guys have bought in. They play physical. They play hard. All of that's great. But from an X's and O's perspective, schematically, in-game adjustments, Buffalo's coaching staff is far superior, and we saw that. We saw the final drive with Daboll of the first half. We saw the first drive out of the second half, the adjustments that were made. And it was something that we kind of hinted at. It's like, we're going to get Cole Beasley going. We're going to, you know, motion Diggs into the slot and get him going. So once the pressure became a little bit too much, basically sent guys on deep routes and had Beasley come underneath them short, and the pressure couldn't get to him in time to hit Beasley, or vice versa. We're sending, you know, Davis deep, and we're running Diggs right behind him for a quick pass. And they made those adjustments that were needed, and that was the difference in the ballgame. And the other thing, it seemed like, I know there were some drops early again from Deontay Johnson, but the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of succumbed to all the pressure of trying to get the ground game going. So you get James Conner back, and it's like, okay, we're going to hand it off to James Conner. 10 carries for 18 yards. It makes no sense. This is not what the Pittsburgh Steelers are. You need to be more diverse in your pass game. Use the middle of the field a little bit more. Go deeper a little more often. But you're not a running offense. You're never going to be. Your offensive line's getting up there in age. You lost Mike Munchak, your offensive O-line coach, and there's been nothing but regression since then. Much better in pass protection than you are in run blocking. You are a passing team. That's what you need to be. So going out there and basically wasting 17 downs, because that's what they did, 17 carries for 47 yards against one of the least efficient run defenses, you're a pass-first team, and that's what you need to be. And, of course, you didn't get anything dynamic from Fichtner as a play caller. You come out of the half, you're down two possessions, 16-7 at that point. It's a first down run. Buffalo then goes down and scores after the adjustments they made that you couldn't readjust from. And now you're down 23-7. Pittsburgh gets the ball back. What is it? First down run. So they just don't do anything smart and sophisticated. And I'm nitpicking here, but even the endgame situation, you don't even know when to call timeout. So you give Tomlin all the credit in the world for being getting guys to buy in again, and it's organizationally sound, and they play tough, and they're physical, and they draft well, and guys have bought in. But schematically, they still don't do anything well. You still don't know when to call timeouts. You know, down-to-down situationally, it's just not very good for Pittsburgh.
What is Pittsburgh's ceiling at this point? We know that they have an easy game, theoretically, Monday Night Football. They'll finally get a little bit of extended rest, a chance to pump the brakes, slow things down before they'll travel to Cincinnati as double-digit favorites. But meanwhile, you look at the finishing kick, a game against Indianapolis and a game against Cleveland, two that seem very losable on the surface, knowing all the injuries that have besieged Pittsburgh's defense and an offense that right now, as you mentioned, just lacks innovation.
Fortunately, when you line up some of those teams, you're going to be able to pass the ball on them. So hopefully that's the game plan, is you're going to let Big Ben go out there. You're going to get a little bit more consistency from the receiver group in terms of not dropping passes, because they are going through a little bit of a three-game funk here. So you got to get that going. But you're going to come out and pass the ball in those situations. Based upon those matchups, that's what you're going to do. Now, defensively, You're a little beat up. You're starting to lose some guys out there. You're without Hayden. He should clear concussion protocol here, I would think, for the next game. I'm not panicking. I just think this is what Pittsburgh is, right? They were a beneficiary of a really soft schedule early on in this season, and they took advantage of it, to their credit. They played and won games. They can't change their schedule, but I think we kind of see what Pittsburgh is. And I know everyone's now going to overreact because they've lost two straight. And certainly they're not humming, and they're not playing to their peak level on both sides of the ball. But I don't think it's as bad as it's looked the last two games, and I never thought it was as good as it looked the first 11.
It's always about glass half full, glass half empty type mentality. There's no doubt water ultimately meets its level, and we'll figure out who the Steelers are over the final three games. And an eye on the playoffs for them. Clearly right now, looking up at the Kansas City Chiefs, going to need some help for that number one seed should they get that first round bye. What else stood out to you in a positive manner over the weekend, Payne, whether it was overall team efforts or individual performances?
I think you have to look at the Cardinals' defense and give Daniel Jones some credit for being tough. You know, it's New York City, it's cold weather, it's football. You're making this playoff push, so I get you want to go out there and try to be tough, but this, to me, is on Joe Judge. And certainly the clapper. Daniel Jones should have never been out there. Never. clearly not 100%. He struggled. 3.7 yards per pass attempt, was successful in only 33% of his passes, 3% below expectation with his completion percentage. Didn't have a shred of mobility to his game. He just wasn't a factor. So give Vance Joseph some credit. He realized he was going against a wounded duck here, and we know Vance loves to send blitz, one of the most blitz-happy coaches and defensive coordinators in the entire league. And so the Cardinals dominated this game on that side of the ball. They got pressure, whether it was Jones or you had McCoy in there for a few snaps. Cardinals got pressure on 46% of the Giants' dropbacks. They made huge plays when they did get pressure on the quarterback. So Arizona still out there fighting, surviving. Kyler looked a little bit healthier, was running around a little bit more this week, so hopefully the shoulder continues to progress. But it was a very, very good defensive performance from the Cardinals' defense, and Arizona's still alive at this point.
Yeah, like we said, the Cardinals will welcome in the Philadelphia Eagles. Be one of the more intriguing games on Sunday afternoon as the Eagles fight to stay relevant in the NFC East and Arizona fights to stay relevant in the pursuit of a wild card. In Chicago yesterday, Payne, the much-anticipated quarterback matchup between Mitchell Trubisky and Deshaun Watson didn't exactly live up to any expectations. Of course, I used that quarterback matchup somewhat facetiously. Trubisky outduels Deshaun Watson, tosses three touchdowns. You see the Bears' skill position talent on full display. David Montgomery, first play from scrimmage, 80-yard touchdown run. Allen Robinson, 9 catches for 123 yards. But Deshaun Watson, you want to talk about operating with a deck stacked against you? There are no weapons to speak of for him on the Texans' offensive side of the ball.
You don't love Kiki?
I mean, that's it. Kiki's a nice number three, but he ain't a number one, that's for sure.
You're not into your hip-hop music. That was a Drake reference.
Yeah, no, I don't know any of that stuff.
I see why you are more beloved on the internet than Darren Revelle. I see that now.
I actually debated inviting him on our podcast today. I was wondering if he was available to come on and talk about trademarks, patent, and sports business law or whatever else he could add to us.
His new kick is baseball cards, not just from like opening old packs, which he's done for a while, but he's now trending into that business sector.
That may also hit too close to home in this podcast too.
Only about 4 years behind the curve, but you know. Listen, you mentioned Chicago. The skill position guys are what carried the day yesterday. Allen Robinson, we love. Like, this dude's going to get paid in the offseason. One of the more underrated receivers in the NFL, putting up huge numbers despite, you think about this, having Blake Bortles and Mitch Trubisky throw to him his entire career. The speed that Mooney has is certainly game-breaking, and I think you have what's going to be one of the NFL's better young tight ends in Cole Kmet. So there's some decent weapons to work with. Now, good offensive performance, but Texans defense is terrible. And I get it. Bears fans haven't seen that offensive performance in a while. So just, you know, it's nice to see that every now and then. However, after watching that game, two things are very true. Mitchell Trubisky is probably not a starting quarterback in the NFL. You look at who he played. And you look at some of the metrics. Average intended air yards per pass yesterday, 4.2. So basically, anytime Mitch Trubisky dropped back to pass, the average air yards of that intended pass, 4.2 yards, second lowest of week 14. And somehow, he completed less of those passes than he was expected to. And you keep in mind, this Texans defense, bottom five in the NFL in pass defense, and it's without its best cover corner, and Bradley Roby was popped for PEDs. So I don't really know what to make of Mitch Trubisky, but, you know, did well enough to get it out to guys who made plays. Just put it that way.
Hey, I mean, Bears fans don't know what it's like to score 30 points in back-to-back weeks like they've done against the Lions and Texans. Strength of schedule be damned. The Bears finally found a way to put points on the board. We'll see if that can continue because suddenly they have a meaningful football game on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings, where both teams are 6-7, hoping beyond hope that they can crash the back end of that playoff party despite the odds being stacked against them. But more on that game in a few moments when we get into some of the look-ahead numbers. Other than that, Payne, anything else that you wanted to highlight in a positive manner? Should it be the Rams' performance on Thursday night, completely clamping down on the New England Patriots, or somehow Anthony Lynn finding the way to shut out the Atlanta Falcons in the second half. I didn't know the Chargers were capable of outscoring their opponents after halftime.
I'm going to go in a different direction. Talk about my beloved Indianapolis Colts.
There we go. Get them on.
Showed up
in
a nice road win. What an interesting game. A little battle there early in the week. Then you get some sharp game day money on the Raiders. And I think we both crawled into a ball at that point and didn't take the Indianapolis Colts, who we were leaning to all week there.
Don't want to talk about that either.
You got some big plays from the Colts defense. Now, again, they're trending a little worse as the schedule of offenses has increased, right? Titans offense twice you play. You had the Packers and obviously the Raiders offense, all well above average in offensive efficiency. So we're starting to see what the Colts defense is. They're also banged up at the same time, but offensively they're making and taking advantage of some defenses that haven't been so great the last 5 weeks or so. But the weapons are starting to get a little bit healthier. Phillip Rivers is battling. And we think talked about this. He's fighting through this injury. I think it's probably going to require some offseason surgery. Everyone's calling it a toe. I'm hearing it's a plantar issue. But came out winging the ball all over. T.Y. Hilton comes out of the bye. He's reinvigorated. He's a new man. And if he is back to being T.Y., the offense goes to another place that we didn't think it could potentially go. And at the same time, you're getting Michael Pittman acclimated to the NFL. This is, you know, his rookie season. But as you get towards the end of the season, it's like the freshman plus, sophomore minus type season. So he's getting acclimated. The tight ends are nice weapons. But you go out there, 456 yards of offense, 7.7 yards per play, and pretty explosive. You know, 9 explosive runs, 5 explosive passes. You start to look at some of these metrics, Todd, you see why Paul Gunther got fired this morning.
I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with that Raiders defense. Let's not put it all on Paul Gunther. We could put it on personnel. But the reality of it is they're one of the worst teams as far as fourth quarter scoring margin. And whether you want to blame the offense or you want to blame the Raiders defense, I think it's shared responsibility for things that have gone wrong in Vegas, especially knowing that this team was very much in the thick of things for a playoff race. And we talked about it before jumping on airplane. If the Raiders don't get that ridiculous finish that got Greg Williams fired last Sunday, a team that had everything in the world to play for has 3 losses, 1 in blowout fashion on the road against Atlanta, 1 to a team that was previously without a win in the Jets, and you follow it up with a must-win at home, losing by 17 points in a game that was 1 possession at the break.
Ugly scene, and you're watching these games, at least Raiders games, a little more in-depth than I have been. But something seems to be missing there. Huge opportunity gone by the wayside. They went from about a 41% chance to make the playoffs down to about 19% this morning with that loss. Obviously, 3 winnable games down the stretch. You have the Thursday nighter, and I know the travel isn't all that large for the Chargers, and it's a game we'll break down Thursday. But starting to see a little steam. You get the big game against Miami, also at home, and that will be for, I would say that has a massive impact on some of the wild card seedings. So you have 3 winnable games down the stretch. You can get to 10 wins. Hopefully that would be enough. You'll need some help. Probably huge Browns fans this evening if you're a Raiders fan. So something needs to turn around. And I think Gruden was looking for a little bit of a spark. Paul Gunther becomes that scapegoat. Obviously he was without Heath and Arnett in the secondary. And it showed. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, they need to figure out what's going on the defensive side of the ball. You don't have pass rush. Your corners and secondary are a little young. Everyone raves about Abram. Not my kind of guy. Can't cover. So they're going to have to address some things defensively through the draft. You're going to have to find a pass rusher. I know Clelin Ferrell has come on a little bit. He's certainly not playing to where you drafted him, but is at least playing decently, and he's one of the better run-stopping ends, run-setting edges. Coming off, I think, last week was one of his better games. It's just there's not a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. So they need to get that figured out.
We'll see what the Raiders elect to do and how ultimately they finish the season. As you mentioned, in-depth preview right here on the Bet the Board podcast on Thursday when they play host to the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't want to nitpick here, Payne, but I feel we have to, just given the fact they're playing a laundry list of close games, albeit winning, and they're still... I know, but I'm going to, because when you're the defending Super Bowl champions, we expect you to be perfect week in, week out. And right now, this Kansas City Chiefs offense, especially on the ground, I mean, is it something that's going to improve from now to the end of the regular season, or do the Chiefs go, hey, look, the running game is a nice luxury, but it's one that we don't need to win football games and defend our Super Bowl?
Coming into the game, they were 10th in rushing efficiency, and that was despite, you know, letting Le'Veon Bell touch a football. So I don't think it's that much of a concern. And listen, that was one of the more bizarre games. It was 30-10 Chiefs, and they're driving. So I turned my focus elsewhere, and then suddenly Xavier Howard makes this ridiculous interception, and Miami worked themselves back into it. Early on when I was watching that game, I thought Brian Flores had a decent game plan, and then eventually Kansas City figures you out. And you're right, you're nitpicking here, and I get that the Chiefs don't cover the spread, so it looks like they performed below expectation.
5 weeks in a row they failed to meet expectations.
Yep, but you're kind of looking at this and saying the Chiefs somehow hang 33 on the road despite turning it over at the Miami 22, the Miami 38, the Miami 42, and the Miami 24. So four trips inside the Dolphins 42 turned into 0 points. Mahomes wasn't crisp by any stretch of the imagination. But if that offense is crisp, they're hanging 50 here on Brian Flores with no problem. So, to me, they're still figuring some things out. To me, and I could be completely off here, it feels like they're trying a slew of things. And they're working on things that they could potentially see down the line. And they're trying to sharpen all of the tools in the shed as opposed to just being this one-trick pony. Now, that trick is very good with Patrick Mahomes chucking it all over the park. But I think they're working on some things. Because they know inevitably, at least from what I understand and what I am looking at, is this playoff series that we're going to be witnessing here pretty soon going to be all predicated on matchups. It just feels like they're fine-tuning some things so they're able to play in a few different styles. That's just what it feels like to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to say that this Chiefs team has any reason to panic. I just like to nitpick for them. Given how dominant this offense can be, as you mentioned, when everything clicks on all cylinders, I know there have been bettors coast to coast disappointed in their performance and inability to close some of these games out. They get out to the tremendous leads and take their foot off the accelerator. Just interesting to see how they've performed against the number over the last 5 weeks. But we talk about it all the time. The point spread is designed to be the great equalizer, especially with elite teams in the National Football League. As far as ugly goes, Payne, I don't know if I want to eulogize or pile dirt, but Dan Bailey, my God, is there a sports psychologist out there somewhere that he can speak to after his performance kicking the football the last couple weeks?
It's bad. Something you don't expect from a veteran that was just automatic in Dallas. I mean, there's a reason he was let go, and it is certainly a confidence thing. No doubt about it, and much to our chagrin, it was the reason we don't get there with the best bet. And I know a lot of people will just, you know, tabulate points in their head. He missed 3 field goals and a point after and yada, yada, yada. That only gets you to 47. But when you score, it then makes your opponent do different things. So you would have saw a little bit more of an aggressive approach from that Tampa offense. And then you had Tom missing some things early in that game. But I didn't really like anything Minnesota decided to do. And it's not just the Dan Bailey missed kicks. You still have those trips to the 11 that you could have gotten a touchdown where he, you know, misses. Or, but the way that you end up getting defended changes because they know that you don't have confidence in Dan Bailey. So you're trying to create these negative plays knowing that if you can push them into questionable territory, like we're not going to attempt one with Dan Bailey. And sure enough, they did at 54 yards, and that thing's not even close. I don't know if that thing landed in the park. So
I think that thing landed on a ship somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico, actually.
It was interesting. And then for some reason, and I get it, right? We're all going to hear about how Dalvin Cook went for over 100 yards the first time. You know, the Bucs have allowed a 100-yard rusher all season, I believe, was the number. And it's like, kudos, congrats, you lost the game. The way to attack Tampa was certainly through the air. And to me, that was missed opportunities there, running the ball as often as Minnesota did. And you have to look to Gary Kubiak and company. And mind you, yes, mathematically, still in the playoff hunt. But that was a massive game to lose. So you're down, was it 23-7 early in that third quarter? Maybe some tempo. How about that? Maybe some no huddle. Get the offense going. No, we're just going to have Kirk Cousins look over to the sideline, get the play in, then come to the huddle, kneel down, come out and snap the ball with 4, 5, and 6 seconds left on the play clock virtually the entire third quarter, rather than trying to get your offense in some form, into some rhythm. That was the disappointing part of watching that game. Obviously, though, the missed trips for points early in that game is ultimately what caused us and our listeners to drop a game.
Vikings run 27 more plays than the Bucs in that contest, pick up 32 more yards, lose the net yards per play battle by 1.8 yards per spot. And Payne, you talk about the kicking points for Vikings, 3 field goals, 1 extra point. Bucs, 1 extra point, 11 kicking points alone left on the carpet there, let alone game flow and everything else that would have been dictated by a game that saw 31 points scored in, or 37 points if I could do math in my head the right way, between the second and third quarter, and a grand total of 3 points in the bookends, first and fourth. So wasn't sure if there was anything else you wanted to hit on as far as stuff that really disappointed you over the weekend before we move the show along into a couple of look-ahead adjustments.
Guide the ship ahead, kind sir.
You can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You, of course, can follow me there as well. And more importantly, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. And Payne, when we look at look-ahead lines, and over the last couple of weeks, we haven't seen a whole lot of market movement. I was blown away by how some of these point spreads have changed, given one additional data point. And when we look at Thursday night's game, FanDuel hasn't moved as much as the rest of the market here on a Monday morning. You're still showing the Raiders as a 3-point favorite. You do have to lay $1.15 at FanDuel Sportsbook. But the look-ahead number here was 3.5, and we've seen some books that reopen 3 trending out to 3.5. Some injury concerns for the Chargers, short week, but fair or foul that this number has bounced around a key number?
I don't know if either team's playing overly well, so it becomes a difficult game to handicap. And sure enough, it's a short week, and typically the home team has an advantage there, but the travel isn't all that daunting for the Chargers. I know they come away with a win, but it is a little concerning with what they're doing offensively. If you were looking to back the Chargers here, I mean, as soon as Austin Eckler came back, and I know you'll people will look at the box score and be like, man, great game. What do you have? You know, almost 150 total yards between rushing and receiving. But at this point, they've turned Justin Herbert into like Captain Checkdown with his return. I mean, completed air yards, 2.7 yesterday. Average intended air yards, 5.3. This was an offense that was opened up without Austin Eckler. You thought he would come back and just be this complimentary piece that teams would have to focus on underneath and would open things up more down the field. And that just hasn't been the case. Anthony Lynn, Mr. Conservative, let's get that ground game going, has turned into basically an offense that runs it or throws short. And you mentioned Keenan Allen. It's an injury we'll have to monitor. Tough guy. Let's see if he gets out there on a short week, but missed some crucial snaps in that second half. So we'll have to monitor his status. But yeah, you're looking at, I know FanDuel's dealing the juice 3, but we're out to 3.5 and even some soft 4 at a couple other spots in the market this morning. So at least early on, some money on the Raiders, and it's a game we'll break down Thursday and have a little bit more better intel at that point.
Yep, definitely curious to see where this number ultimately finds its resting spot between now and the 72 hours before kickoff. The Indianapolis Colts, look ahead number had them as a 6.5-point home favorite against the Houston Texans. That number now out to a full touchdown, lay $1.15 at FanDuel Sportsbook. Deshaun Watson a little bit nicked up in the wake of the Texans debacle against the Chicago Bears, as we talked about the Colts getting a big win on the road, but this is still playing a division opponent inside a very short turnaround time, a game the Colts were pretty fortunate to win last weekend, 26-20, as Deshaun Watson and the Texans fumbled away what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with under 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, something we've referenced, I think, a couple times this year, and the trends worked out pretty well. It's that quick turnaround revenge. And so the trend certainly favors Houston. But after that performance last week, you just wonder if they're playing out the stretch. We know the defense obviously has gobs of issues, and you lose your best cover corner. Probably not the best matchup against a surging Colts offense. But obviously Price is the great equalizer here, the number. And we'll have to monitor the status of some of these Houston Texans guys. We know Cooks was a late scratch Sunday morning. Let's see if he's back. Kiki battled through some injuries. There's not a lot of weapons there for the Houston Texans. And then, as you alluded to, Deshaun Watson goes down late in that game, clutching his shoulder and hand, both on the throwing side. He does return late, but let's see what this looks like and monitor it throughout the week.
Don't think there's much to say about this game, because obviously the rich get richer and the bottom of the barrel is the definition or the parallel for the New York Jets at this point. The Rams look ahead number 13.5 point favorites for their date hosting the Jets. This number now out to 17. The Rams extra time to prepare, and the Jets getting absolutely bludgeoned on the road 40-3 by the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing right now is a little inflation in the price. Must win versus a team playing out the stretch. But I think the other thing here is there needs to be a little bit of protection, because oddsmakers are cognizant that Seattle, minus 13.5 last week, was a very sharp play. They got buried with professional money at 13.5 on Seattle, and that trickled out to, I believe, as high as 16. So you do have a Rams team that is certainly going to have a little bit extra time to prepare for this Jets offense, which isn't overly dynamic. So this becomes one of those games that's interesting. You're going to hear, and we've heard throughout time and even with us, right, taking these kinds of points with a total this low mathematically makes some sense. Ultimately, in recent weeks, that just hasn't been the case. We've seen professional bettors blow through that theory, laying it with the Saints on the road against Denver. We saw it again similar last week with the Jets taking money against. Eventually what happens here is you create enough short fields and there's enough turnovers to where the Rams defense helps you score points. And I don't see a situation where Jared Goff is under pressure here very, very much. So I'm not running to take the points here. That's for sure.
Yeah, would it shock anybody whatsoever if this game was 34-3 with the favorite covering and the game staying under the total, much like we saw last week unfold in Seattle in a similar scenario as you referenced with the Saints against the Broncos, despite the low total, game still stayed under at 31-3 there. This one is interesting for me, Payne, because I know there's some injuries that are impacting it, but Tampa, on a look-ahead number, was a 1.5-point favorite on the road against the Atlanta Falcons. This number now all the way out to 5. At FanDuel Sportsbook. Julio Jones, of course, didn't play this past weekend. Atlanta's offense looked like it was stuck in neutral for the better part of the entire second half. But Tampa, as we referenced some of the stat line, didn't exactly go out there and light the world on fire. Divisional game, we've seen Atlanta rise up in these occasions in the past. Do you think this is too drastic an overreaction here?
So, you know, one shop opened this week at 3.5, and we've seen it kind of leak out. So, like, you know, last night, one shop opens 3.5. Take some money. Let's see where this ultimately goes. You mentioned Atlanta battling some injuries there. The look-ahead line was created with the idea that Julio Jones would be in. Obviously, he is worth something to this spread. Atlanta's offense has not been humming, but you know, this comes down to price. If this gets up to 7, certainly probably some intrigue from professional bettors at that point. But what you're going to see this time of year is a little bit of an inflation with teams in that, air quotes, must-win situation versus teams just playing out the stretch. And that's partly what we have here, along with some injury questions. And Atlanta had those going into last week's game. And it's not just Julio Jones. You're down two guys along the starting offensive line that we'll have to monitor as well.
This game getting to 7. We know someone's going to get an itchy trigger finger long before that actually happens.
I know.
When you look at this game, Seattle will make the cross-country trip to take on the Washington football team.
Putting it into the air. And maybe you wait.
Seattle on the look ahead number was just a field goal favorite. This number has ballooned out to 4.5, despite Washington getting the big win on the road outright as a field goal underdog in San Francisco. But questions swirling about who will be the man under center, with Alex Smith being sidelined in the second half and the Dwayne Haskins sighting. I'm not quite sure how I really want to try and encapsulate his performance, but Dwayne Haskins could potentially get yet another start this week against Seahawks.
Kudos to the Washington football team defense. Jack Del Rio has been a wizard making halftime adjustments on that side of the ball. And they came out. They saw Alex Smith was down, and they took it upon themselves to dominate that second half. Scoop and score from Chase Young for a defensive touchdown, which sealed that game against San Francisco. We'll have to monitor the status of Alex Smith. I watched it. It goes off into the sidelines. They're calling it a calf injury. It's tough to watch, man. They put him down on the sidelines, and he's just kind of looking at the last series as if nothing is like going on. They put this contraption around his leg, and you see the trainer just kind of working the foot, and you're like, my God, I hope his foot doesn't fall off in the guy's hand. He feels so like brittle. Like, it just makes me a little wheezy watching that. So hopefully Alex Smith is up. If not, it's Dwayne Haskins, and we kind of know what the coaching staff feels about Haskins at this point. He was third on the totem pole. We basically cast him off to the side and said, hey, you can't adhere to what we want from you, which is, hey, don't go out and be the greatest quarterback in the world, but can you at least read? Do you at least know where we want you to go with the ball first? You know what your second option is. And none of those things, at least initially in this season, Dwayne Haskins could do. So we'll have to monitor the status of Alex Smith, because that will have a large impact, despite us thinking Alex Smith is probably a average at best quarterback at this point. He at least knows where the ball is supposed to go. He's not going to make that costly brain fart. And so we'll have to see what's going on here with this one. I'm not quite sure. I'm not the guy that's like running out and laying points on the road, but at 4, I certainly see why someone did.
When you look at this game, Payne, I was surprised by this overreaction in the market. The Vikings look to be a 6.5-point home favorite in their second matchup of the season against division mate Chicago Bears. This number, by virtue of the results we saw on Sunday, down to 3.5 at FanDuel. I don't want to call this one of the largest overreactions we've seen over the last 6-8 weeks, but I'll be honest, I was stunned to see this price adjusted by a full field goal.
Week to week, that was the adjustment. Sunday night, last night, there was 4.5. We saw a little early money on Chicago. Let's see if that's the true position, or if you're looking to get this down to 3 and late. I don't know at this point. It's, you know, very early Monday morning. I haven't spoken to my guys yet to figure out what is going on there. But just from a market standpoint, you have the Bears offense perceptionally coming around. You have Minnesota with an injury to their quarterback on defense in Kendricks. Let's see if he's able to go here. But that's basically it. I am certainly not running to take Chicago at this number. That's for sure.
And we talk all the time about, you know, home revenge and what it could potentially mean. But for anybody that watched the first matchup between these two, albeit with Nick Foles under center, the Bears did struggle to move the ball in primetime at Soldier Field. And last but not least, the game that we will preview in great detail on Sunday, the marquee matchup for Week 15, the Kansas City Chiefs on the road at the New Orleans Saints. Look-ahead number for this at Kansas City, a modest field goal favorite. We've seen a slight adjustment here with Kansas City out to 4 right now at FanDuel Sportsbook, but you did see a little bit of buyback elsewhere in the market. The 4s pretty much didn't stick. Question swirling, of course, about who the Saints will use under center. Will we see Drew Brees return, or will it be Chapter 4 of the Taysom Hill experience?
And coming into last week's game against Philadelphia, the idea was that they were going to wait until Drew Brees was 100% healthy from the 11 broken ribs. Let's see if he talks his way into this game, but it certainly changes the handicap, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more intel there as we break it down on Thursday. But the game feels very different if it's Drew Brees out there, maybe potentially a little rusty, versus Taysom Hill. Now, the key to that game will obviously be if Spags can take away the ground game. because that's something that New Orleans has done very well with, just being the more physical team at the point of attack, especially on offense. And after being embarrassed at least through the first 30 minutes by the Eagles defense in that area, you know that's going to be the talking point from Sean Payton all week. We need to be a little bit more physical. We need to win at the point of attack. That game has different elements to it, right? Because if it is Taysom Hill and Kansas City can get out and score and force Taysom to be a passer, changes some things dramatically in that game. So another one that we will break down on Thursday. Haven't dug into everything yet. Don't have all the information, but we'll have more certainly on Thursday.
It looks to be an attractive slate, at least on the surface. And as always, just want to kind of tip our hand in terms of where the market's going, how it overreacts or underreacts in some cases to an additional data point. But of course, we'll have those deep dive breakdowns for you on the Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. But before we get to Thursday, we of course have a Monday night football game with a lot of intrigue in its own right to cap things off. Before we get to that though, we encourage you to go to FanDuel Sportsbook, download the app, sign up, FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard. Take advantage of all those generous sign-up bonus, all sorts of unique prop offerings, in same game parlays, you name it, FanDuel has you covered. Everything right there in the palm of your hand. Restrictions do apply. Responsible gaming. There are a variety of avenues to go down that path as well. Payne, when we look at the game tonight, we've seen a major move in the market here. Opened up right around a pick'em. Totals held pretty steady in that 45.5-46 range, although we did appear to see a little bit of oversteam throughout the market earlier today. FanDuel now out to Baltimore, a 3-point road favorite. You do have to lay $1.20 in this particular spot. We know the Ravens on the outside looking into the playoff picture, but for winnable games, if they're able to get through tonight to close things out, they did snap their 3-game losing skid earlier last week against the Dallas Cowboys. They've won and covered the last two against the Browns. Meanwhile, on the flip side, the Cleveland Browns, they have the best record through 12 games going back to 1994 when Bill Belichick was their head coach. They've won 4 straight games since their bye week in week 9, and of course are looking to end the NFL's longest active playoff drought of 17 straight seasons. When you look at the Ravens, they've actually been better from a point spread perspective when they go out on the road, covering at a 70% clip over their last 20 games. When you ultimately try and break this game down, I know we're going to get into some of the X's and O's, and that'll probably help explain why this number has gone. But are you surprised that you've seen a full field goal move on this particular matchup?
I'm aware of who laid the one, so I'm not overly shocked. But I was a little surprised seeing someone come in yesterday that is well-respected, basically lay 2.9. So they laid 3 even. So really tells you how strong this position is on the Ravens. Now, this morning, there's a couple shops that were touching soft 3.5. We have seen some buyback there. I mean, at the end of the day, right, you lay 1, you take 3.5 and not even worry about the game. Go get a beverage, hang out on the beach and forget about it, because that's you're going to earn in life doing that. But in terms of this being like a real position on Baltimore, absolutely.
When you look at Baltimore and some of the success that they've had in the past against the Cleveland Browns, Lamar Jackson's put together pretty prolific passing numbers. We know the Cleveland defense is extremely banged up in the secondary. The Tennessee Titans weren't smart enough to take advantage of that in the first half. Last weekend in the game, they did find some success throughout the second half. Corey Davis had a big play or two, same with A.J. Brown. Baltimore today, when you're devising a game plan to go up against Cleveland, should they try and be a tiger that changes its stripes and throws first, getting Mark Andrews and Willie Snead back in the fold? Or do you think we're going to continue to see Baltimore look to run it, hope Cleveland plays 8 men in the box, and it's business as usual for a Ravens rushing attack that amassed nearly 300 yards on Tuesday night against the Cowboys?
I think they are who they are. You know, it's cliche, but the easiest way to make the playoffs a lot of the time is by taking care of your own division. And teams will draft based upon who is in their division all the time. And the Ravens, because they can run with Lamar, have had the Browns' number. And if you look right now, Lamar has started 4 games in his career against the Browns. Baltimore's won all 4 by an average of like 16.25 points. Ravens have outscored the Browns 135-70 in four of Lamar's starts against these guys, and it's because of what's happening in the trenches and on the ground. Baltimore's averaged 205 rushing yards in those four games with Lamar. 28 explosive runs in those four games. Just nuts. Now, despite the scoreboard back in week one, we have a new defensive coordinator in Joe Woods. He actually did a decent job containing the Ravens' run game. 3.6 yards a carry, 40% success rate on the ground. Lamar actually beat the Browns with his arm through the air. Now, the one thing that we're going to have to look for in this game and why this total initially ticked down, got as high as 47, down to 45.5. Let's see where it ultimately settles here, but it's because there's 17-mile-per-hour winds in this game with gusts even higher. But I do think this side of the ball, at least, comes down to the Ravens being able to run the ball. It's really as simple as that. They have to be able to run the ball. Unless Lamar has this out-of-body experience type game where he's thrown it all over the park, which has been few and far between. Now, the Ravens do a decent job still running the ball, right? They're just not as explosive. They're still fifth in rushing efficiency. And if you look at the Browns defensively on the surface, they would appear just to be slightly below average, stopping the run 19th in defensive rush efficiency. But if you really, you know, peel back the curtain here a little bit, and look at some of the deeper metrics, the number to me is a little phony because rushing efficiency incorporates explosiveness. So Cleveland's done a good job preventing explosive runs, top 10 in that. But if you just look down to down, the Browns are getting their brains beat in. 56% of runs have graded successful against the Browns. Cleveland's faced the fifth easiest schedule of run offenses. So when you schedule adjust the Browns' defense, they're dead last in rushing success rate allowed. So it's going to have to be a Herculean effort here, and I get it. There's a little bit of hope. Joe Woods figured out a game plan defensively to stop the run back in week one, and back then, the Ravens' offensive line was a little bit healthier. So I think that's what people are if you're a Browns fan, you're at least holding on to that. Lamar does get Mark Andrews back, which is a massive boost to the offense. The Browns, you look at them, there were some question marks this offseason when we broke them down in the season preview that said, hey, you know, they're going to need some help at linebacker. It's not an overly talented unit. They let go of Joe Schobert. But the Browns are giving up almost 6 receptions a game to tight ends. 10 yards a reception to tight ends. Third most touchdowns allowed to tight ends. We know Lamar doesn't throw the ball the best, not the tightest spiral. And again, 17-mile-per-hour winds, gusts even higher. I think it's good to get Andrews back to help that intermediate to maybe even short passing area there. Now, I know they do go downfield a little bit to Andrews as well down the seam, but it's a huge weapon to get back. There is obviously opportunity to beat Cleveland through the air. That's where they are the weakest by far, 22nd defensive pass efficiency, and I think we've kind of discussed that number being probably even worse. They played those three games in weather, which suppressed opposing offenses and helped some of their defensive metrics. So I don't believe this is the 22nd best pass defense. But hey, if you look at success rate, Cleveland's also 22nd in passing success rate defense. They faced a bottom five schedule of both passing offenses and explosive passing offenses. So even though it is Lamar in this pass game and there is some weather, they probably have some success throwing it. This just isn't the secondary the Browns hope to have coming into the season. You know, we talked about this. Like, they went out there saying, hey, this is going to be one of the best young secondaries. We're going to have a great coach in Joe Woods who turned the San Francisco secondary around. You know, the thought process was we're going to have Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams manning the corner. We went out and got Grant Delpit in the draft, and suddenly we have a slew of first and second round guys in the secondary that Joe Woods is going to be able to mentor. None of those guys are here in this game. So Baltimore is going to have some opportunities metrically to have success both running and passing, and that's what they have had in the last four meetings with Lamar at quarterback against this Browns team.
Would it be a Browns game, honestly, Payne, if we didn't have 15 to 20 mile an hour winds involved? Normally those games take place in Cleveland, but at least they're bringing the weather with them for tonight's game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm interested to see what that looks like around kickoff. I mean, I know, you know, not to go backwards, but last night, early in the week, if you were looking at the Buffalo game, like, oh, it's going to be weather. This is something that we monitored throughout the course of the week, and then it actually looks good at kick. And then about 3 minutes into the game, you have something that's you can't project, which is this lake effect. And I'm not going to go into what that is, but you can certainly Google it and see that it's not overly predictive. So, you know, Cleveland has that a little bit. But at this point, it looks like it's going to be clear. It's just the win that might have an impact here.
One last thing on Baltimore from an offensive standpoint. We talked about it going into Thursday night's game with the Rams, that it was time to basically take the governor off your rookie running back. And Cam Akers exceeded everyone's expectations, going for 170 yards, asserting himself as the leading back. Are we finally at that point with the Baltimore Ravens where it should just be J.K. Dobbins all the time? I mean, 26 carries the last two times we've seen him out there, 140 yards. He now has three games in his last five appearances where he's gone for 70 or more. And if the Indianapolis Colts and the New England game, sure, he averaged less than 3 yards a pop with 17 combined carries. But this is a guy that offers home run potential and has touchdowns in each of his last two starts. Why does Coach Harbaugh still feel a need to get all of his running backs touches?
Mark Ingram's your veteran, and he is a team leader, so I think that is why. But we've been clamoring for more Dobbins since the Colts game, if you remember. And right now, he hasn't had the qualifying number of rush attempts. I believe right now he is well under the 99 rushes to qualify, but in the carries that he does have, he is 24% better than an average back. Now, I am not a Gus Edwards guy, but metrically, give him credit. He is running hard. We know the relationship that he has with Lamar because they spent that first year together with the third team reps and on the practice squad. So there's that familiarity. There's that comfortable nature they have with the type of offense they run, right? Which is, you know, at the mesh point, the handoff, is Lamar keeping it? Is he putting it in his stomach? They have that bond because they've done it so many times. And to his credit, Gus Edwards right now, 11% above an average running back. So the only guy you would be weeding out at this point is your veteran leader in Mark Ingram. So I get the conundrum that Baltimore's in here.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. You have to keep a lot of pieces happy, but at some point you figure you'll go with the bell cow, and apparently until further notice, we'll see Coach Harbaugh continue to distribute those carries. On the other side, a running back tandem that's worked exceptionally well is one that the Cleveland Browns can be very proud of. More than 1,500 combined yards between Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt as they're trying to become only the eighth duo to each run for 1,000 yards in a season. This is the number two rushing offense in the NFL, and Baker has obviously been a huge beneficiary of that. 11 touchdown passes and just one pick over his last six games. But this is a Cleveland offense, Payne, that likes to operate with multiple tight end sets, and there's a very good chance, I haven't seen him officially ruled out, that they could go into battle tonight without the services of Austin Hooper, who was a DNP on both Friday and Saturday.
Certainly trending towards not playing. That's for sure. So we'll have to monitor that. When I look at this game in general, it is very simple to determine the winner based upon what you will see. And I know that sounds really dumb, but can Baltimore run? Can Cleveland run? Can Baltimore get pressure? Those are the three things. And the winner will be decided ultimately because of those things. Baker, we've hit on it, but again, it's worth mentioning because it's just so drastic. I've never seen anything like this. He is a different quarterback with pressure versus being kept clean. I mean, I don't know what goes on. I don't know if it's a skill limitation. I don't know if it's a mindset thing. But if Baltimore is able to get pressure on Baker, they're going to win this game. And we're watching this, Todd, now. I mean, it looks like a real shot we're getting to 3.5 here. But Baker right now, 116 passer rating when no pressure is on him. 78% adjusted completion percentage, 20 touchdowns to 3 picks. Under pressure, this guy, I don't even know who he is. 32 passer rating, 1 touchdown,
he's
4 picks.
He's Jared Goff, Payne. That's who he is.
Worse than Jared Goff. And candidly, Jared Goff hasn't been this good when he's kept clean. So it's like we now have this long history of what Baker is. The sample size is there. The data is there. You keep him clean, you win games. And if you can't protect him, things are ugly. He's not an NFL quarterback. That's the reality of this. He goes from being an above average quarterback kept clean to being someone that's not on an NFL roster when he's pressured. That's how large this dichotomy is. I mean, you're talking about a passer rating that dips 84 points. This isn't just fluky, right? Like, we're looking at 359 data points this year of dropbacks from Baker Mayfield. 84 points. It's just massive. The other thing you look at is what are the Browns going to do on the ground? We know they want to run. We know you have this double-headed monster. Everyone knows you want to run as well. It's why you're only 13th in rush efficiency. You get Wyatt Teller back, who was activated from the COVID list, so that's huge. Big help for the Browns O-line there. And you're looking at a Baltimore defensive front. Calais Campbell only played 29% of snaps against the Cowboys. Didn't practice this week. Tough guy, huge game. Maybe he battles through it, but he's certainly not 100%. Brandon Williams only played 37% of snaps against the Cowboys. He's not 100%. Those are two of your better run-stopping guys. Even though the overall numbers didn't look great, you did get pushed around at times against a depleted Cowboys offensive line. They were able to get some push up front against the Ravens D-line. And again, I know the rushing numbers did not look great for Dallas. I believe it was 4 yards a carry. Rushing success rate well below league average. But when you watched it, they were getting some push. And, you know, if you're looking at this just, you know, in an Excel sheet, you have a Ravens defense that's fourth in rush efficiency. You would think they'd be able to stop this, but they're not 100%. So let's see what this looks like. In terms of schedules, both the Browns run offense and the Ravens run defense, they've faced slightly below average schedules. So there's a lot of, I think, variance in this matchup on if Baltimore's going to be able to stop the run or not. If you're looking at the part of the field where the Ravens have been the worst stopping the run, it's outside right hash, giving up 67% success rate on those runs. Again, small sample, but outside the hash marks to the right, they haven't been as good. And then they haven't been great defending runs over the left tackle and the outside left hash either. 60% success rate on those two areas. So let's see if Stefanski's running some pitches outside the hashes tonight, and maybe if that's where the Browns will have some success. Something to watch for. But again, you have two key cogs on the defensive line for Baltimore that are, if they play, not 100%. So I think that skews some things a little bit here. The other matchup or game within the game is Jarvis Landry going against Humphrey. If Humphrey removes Jarvis Landry from the game, then what? We know Baker not only struggles against pressure, but you can get him off his first read. He becomes a little bit of a different quarterback as he has to navigate the field and search out for that second read. Doesn't look like Hodge is going to play. He does have a nice rapport with Higgins. And, you know, he'll have to have a big game here. But when you're looking at this, Landry has a 32% target share in games without OBJ. So he is clearly Baker's favorite target. And if Humphrey removes him from this game, makes things a little bit more difficult, especially with, you mentioned, Hooper potentially out. Now, there are a little bit stacked at tight end. There's some nice options there with Bryant and Njoku. But, you know, you spent a boatload on Austin Hooper. You'd like to have him out there if Landry is removed from this game. Humphrey, to this point in the season, allowing a shade over 1 yard per route run. So, again, if Landry is removed, that becomes the big question mark here. I would expect some... You know, both teams are certainly going to try to run the football, and I think the total has variance because of that. You know, if Baltimore can't run and they're forced to throw this ball a little bit more, that changes things because Baltimore's 31st in neutral situation pace. So if they're not running and forced to pass, suddenly I would think the pace increases and obviously the clock stops because there's going to be a decent amount of incomplete passes. So there's just a lot of variance in this game for me. And at this point, at this price point, it's tough to tell anybody to go to the window with a Baltimore minus 3.3 ticket when you could have laid one earlier. Again, so I kind of want to clarify that. Like, Baltimore is the side, but it's, to me, it's not the side right now at this current number. Now, probably not running to take Cleveland at this number, but Baltimore was the side well below the three.
I mean, I just figured you were going to come on here and you were going to say about the number getting to 3.5 that Cleveland was a teaser wheel that everyone should be involved in. No, all kidding aside, I know we can't joke about some of these things.
Yeah, you can't joke about that stuff anymore, apparently.
So, no, No, we want to keep it on the straight and narrow around these parts because we are a very serious podcast from start to finish. Although you did take a jab at the clock being stopped if Baltimore has to throw, indicating that Lamar Jackson isn't a highly accurate passer, which I think is a dig and a cheap shot, quite frankly.
I don't agree.
When you look at this game, there's no doubt that Cleveland will see how they handle prosperity. And if Baltimore can get a big win, get themselves back in the playoff mix, knowing that their finishing kick includes a home date against Jacksonville, a road date against the New York Giants, and they'll wrap up the final week, I believe, at Cincinnati. Can't remember where it is, home or road, but I know that is their week 17 opponent. So it should be a great game, worth watching, even if a lot of the value has been taken out of the side, should you like the favorite. Obviously, if you're trying to make a case for the Cleveland Browns, you may want to wait this out to 3.5, but we've given you our 2 cents on this particular matchup. Payne, anything else you would like to share with our loyal listeners before we take a little bit of a break from the National Football League before we reconvene on Thursday, knowing that we have championship week to focus on the college gridiron on Wednesday morning?
No, that's everything. Back on Wednesday with championship week, potentially the last college pod of the season. A lot of, I think, some good games for college. And Thursday for the NFL, and again, lining up to be some decent NFL games on Sunday.
Yeah, a lot to be excited about. We've had a couple of unattractive schedules as far as the National Football League is concerned. This week doesn't appear to be the case. And hey, Payne, I know you're extremely excited because the Cleveland Browns not only play in primetime tonight, they play in primetime again on Sunday night with Baker Mayfield taking the national stage. Best of luck to all of
you. I think the games were schedule-wise in prime time this week. They were supposed to be good. It was a good effort.
Yes. Yeah, it was. I mean, Sunday night was the flagship game. It just didn't live up to any of the advanced billing because Pittsburgh's offense, as you talked about earlier in the show, is extremely unimaginative and couldn't make that game more competitive down the stretch like we thought it might have been.
No, but it was a good effort. Like, I went into the week saying, man, there's some good games. It's going to be a good week.
Well, this week we have a rarity, and I mean, I know that college football always is first and foremost for you, but you're going to have to carve out some space on your 37 TV setup to make sure you get the Carolina Panthers, Green Bay Packers prominently placed, along with the Bills and Denver Broncos. Rare to have NFL and college going head-to-head.
I like Saturday NFL. Glad it's back. Glad it's back.
On that note,
could have used it this past week. What a terrible schedule of games it was Saturday.
That's putting it mildly. Although two of the games in the night slot, at least at late, despite being Pac-12 games, at least provided some entertainment value, to say the least. You can follow Payne on Twitter.
Hey, don't let us keep you from a nap. We'll get you out of here. You want me to close out the show for you?
Well, I mean, if you want, you can take us away.
Let's get out of Dodge.
All right, we're out of Dodge. Best of luck with all of your NFL wagers tonight, however you choose to get to the window in the Ravens and Browns. We'll be back with you on Wednesday for college football and back with you on Thursday for the National Football League.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.